हरिः ॐ सहनववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगणाधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 35, so Uttara. Okay, so they've made the point that... Okay, let's bring their point. We'll do the Purva Paksha. I think... Okay. Okay, start. Siddhanta, because varieties in men's intelligence, arguments are without finality. Right, because different intelligence, people have different levels of intelligence, and because of that, they're better or worse at logic. But that's what's defining how good the logic is. It's not on the logic itself, it's just how good you are at it. Does that make sense? You know, so, you know, it's like a sport or something. It's just whoever's good, that's it.
So, it's kind of when they kind of wrestle with the world?
Basically, because rhetoric means is how to win an argument and all that.
What's Tarka?
Tarka is the argument. Rhetoric is kind of more the techniques that are used. It's like a strategy within Tarka. You know, if they say like this, you say like that, and that kind of thing. So in logic, it's just considered one thing. But in the modern, they've brought it out because rhetoric is their main thing. Well, in the Vedas, it's supposed to be that Siddhanta is the main thing. So the argument isn't actually the important part. It's just that that's the process you're using. Does that make sense? You know, because you're dealing with trying to come to a conclusion. So even in the Vedic, even if they're not Vaishnavas, there's still the concept of a conclusion. Right? While you see in the non-Vedic, generally they tend to stay away from conclusions because then it limits their speculative ability because it's not based on authority other than themselves. Well, when you deal with the Vedic authority, then you're accepting the Vedic authority. And so, therefore, it has to be in line with the Vedas. But they're intelligent enough to understand, even you start with some restriction, still within that restriction, you can still get unlimited variety. While the more general concept will be is insecurity will develop thinking that there's any restriction at all because then it limits what I can do. Does that make sense? You know, if you take one thing, you know, it's like you take music, there's seven notes. It's restricted to seven notes. But now you can make unlimited music out of the seven. Right? You know, it's like that. So that's what we're dealing with. Is that the Vedic, then they have the piety to accept the Vedic version. And so then within that context, now they create the variety. You know, I'm saying, it's just like, let's say, okay, you should cook Bengali cooking. Then I'll think, well, that's too restraining. But that means we don't actually understand the science so well. Otherwise, within Bengali, you can make unlimited. Or you say, oh, it has to be Italian. Within that, you can get unlimited. Within French, within each one of them. But at the same time, is then you can also use them all together because they're based on the same science. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of that more... So there's that idea is that I'm independent and I want to enjoy, but I can do that within the confines of the Vedic authority. And then those that, no, I don't want to be restricted by that because that will restrict my control and enjoyment. Even then when you give that up, actually they're the ones that control and enjoy less. Yeah. But whatever, you know, the modes of nature are good, yes.
Well, practically speaking, Partiva Rasa, it's not very logical.
No.
And then Vaikuntha is more logical, but then if you're trying to reach Golok, it's highly logical. The relationship there, it's not based on logic, it's based on Rasa.
Yes.
So the question, how much logic should we use in our own presentation of Krishna consciousness?
Enough.
Enough.
It's like a friend I know, aristocratic, I think I told this before, aristocratic family. So his father went to buy a Bentley. You know, he was looking at, the Bentley, the Rolls, like this. And so when he was there discussing and they were giving all the, the details of the, the specifications. So then he asked, how much horsepower does it have? You know, they're all very cultured. And the salesman looked back at him and said, enough. Like that. So you use enough. The point is that people... Logic is part of the mental process. It's what we call reasoning. Right? So, means that your information is coming in from the mind, but you're not actually contemplating it. It's just the mind being the center of the activities of the senses. All the information comes in. So it's just the mind is doing that. It's just, without even thinking about it, then so much information is coming in at once from all the senses. Then, from the chitta, now we're conscious. Now we sift through that, and according to our samskaras, then we focus on something. That's why, let's say there's something very important, but because samskara's not there, you don't focus on it. Like, you just say, let's say there's a 2-year-old, and there's some stairs. Okay? What's the adult focusing on?
Safety.
Because stairs, dangerous, they could fall. What's the kid focusing on? Not safety, they're thinking of just, they run around. So in their experience, they run around. They don't have a concept that things, that when you run around and it's, you have different levels that it can be dangerous. So because they don't have any samskaras. Now they fall down the stairs a few times, then they start to have some scars there. In this case you could say, some meaning S-O-M-E. Some scars. So then you do that, but now, so to do that, then you're going into the memory, which is part of intelligence. So the mind has to use intelligence for any functioning, right? So now, I go into the memory, and then from the things of the memory, that's how then I, based on my samskar, I then make a decision. In the way of what I'm going to focus on.
Yeah.
Right? Then, having done that, now we have to take it and categorize that. Like here we said safety, so it's categorized down into one thing. Right? Because unless we can categorize it, we can't work with it. That's why your modern presentations, they do all boxes or bullet points, because it's categories and you can relate to it. Then from that, then once you've categorized it, in other words, reduced it down to something that's workable that you can relate to, right, according to your samskaras. Then, now I'll expand it by what I can do with it. That's where then the intelligence comes up with it. That's called reasoning. You understand? I'll come up with, let's say, 5 different ways I can do something. Right? Generally, it's only 2 ways you can do something, but just to make it sound better, right? So, so, So then, once we come up with all those options that are there and which logically looks to be the best, then the next stage is according to our position, how we identify ourselves. Then we'll make a decision that best matches that. You know, so, you know, what we'll consider best for our situation. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so having made that decision, then it goes back out through to the senses, through the manas again. So we see is that middle part, that's the consciousness is doing. So now if the consciousness is material, this whole process of reasoning and samskaras will be material. Our identity, everything. Now we change the identity, then that starts to change that whole equation. So even though the consciousness may still be material, because we've changed the identity, it changes which choice we make. So we'll make a choice based on a spiritual identity, though we may still have material consciousness. But the effect from doing that, that activity, it will give, therefore, a spiritual result. So it'll start to change the samskaras. Right? So it starts to change how we identify, starts to change, you know, the ego and all this. So then process, but the reasoning process stays the same, the mechanics of it. Now, as we become purified, it becomes better. It's more clear, like clear intelligence, right, instead of clouded intelligence. But the amount of mechanics that we have to work in doesn't necessarily change. It's that we use what we have so much better. Right? You know, it's just like the guy with 180 IQ, he still stays at 180 IQ. But because of ignorance, he can only use it to figure out mundane things. But if you use it in devotional service, now he can come up with more. So with less IQ, then it doesn't matter. That stays the same because when it's used in the absolute, it becomes perfect. So how you work it out, it's perfect. Right? So it's not the volume of it. That's the difficulty, is that those with more intelligence consider that that's the real thing. No, it's the quality of how you use it that's the real thing. Does that make sense? It's not what you have like that. Does that make sense? So the process needs to be used, but only enough where it convinces the mind. Once you get someone there convinced, stop there. The tendency is now they're convinced, now I can keep going. No, stop there. Because if you do, because now that's like, wow, okay, that's a realization for them, or an understanding for them. Now if you add in other things, they lose that, it gets muddled. So you stop there, and that's as far as they're going to get. Then contemplating, now if they ask more, then now that's when you take it. That's the importance of the pariprashna. That you're thinking about, the teacher's trying to make it so you're thinking, and you're trying to think, so that combination, right? Because that's the system we use. Like we've always heard about the cat and the monkey, those systems. Right? So the cat means the teacher just picks up the student and just does everything and that, and then gradually they catch on. The monkey is, you hold on, then we'll take you. You know, like that. So the mother technically doesn't have to do anything. The mother's going someplace, the baby automatically comes along. But, so our system is that of the rope and the well. Right? You hold on to the rope, we pull the rope. So it has the aspect of the cat that we're pulling, but it has the aspect of the monkey you gotta hold on. Does that make sense? That's what we were talking about the other day, is that the monkey part wasn't going on. Like, I'm making points, but people aren't thinking and taking part in that, and so it's just whatever comes up from those samskaras. Whatever the word is or the situation is just, you know, we're just dealing with that first part. We haven't gotten to that, you know, I mean, that next part, which is reasoning. Does that make sense? So that was the difficulty. And so that, not that that's not part of the process, but then you have to take it, contemplate it, use the things, and then you get to there, then it becomes useful, because then it's what's your identity. Right? So if we're keeping an identity based on, you know, material samskaras, and we're working on the samskaras, just between the samskaras and the ego, where's the reasoning? Does that make sense? So the reasoning, when it's working, when it's there, someone, you use the logic up to the point they understand, then you don't have to deal with the logic at that point. Right? Now you can take that point that they understood and get into the experience of it if you want to continue there. But if it's a general question and answer, something like that, then you don't. You just go on to the next point. But if you're dealing with the person, it's either you see you stop there because they're, you know, Felisa, or if adding more will do, but you have to see that there's no overload. You know, it's just like Prashad, how much do you give them? It's how much they can take. It means you can give them the whole bucket if they can eat it, but it's, you know, unless they're, from Siberia, there's a good chance it's not going to be the whole bucket. You know. Is that... Yeah.
Logic is a material tool with the help of which we try to understand spiritual subject matters. But there are also a class of subject matters in spirituality which cannot be understood by logic but only through purity. So then, how is it that...
It's just like, okay, logic, you know, we can't understand by logic and so it requires purity. So it's just like in cooking. Okay, you know the science of cooking, then you have tools to apply that science through. So the various utensils and things like that, right? So, therefore, it's not about the utensils. It's about the knowledge you have. You understand? Like I remember camping, right? And so then somehow or another, you know, kids like pancakes, right? And so naturally they're going out camping, they make, you know, take stuff to make pancakes, right? Now there's another problem there, because you're dealing with kids, do they think of everything? No. Okay, so you have pancakes, and so pancakes means a pan. So they got the pan, they got the stuff to make the pancakes. Do they bring a spatula? Are you kidding? Forget it. You know, like that. Huh? Yeah, but no, but how do you get it loose first? Now you have these Teflon things. So then you see that they'd be cooking there. There's no spatula. And then when they're ready, they take it and hit it against like a tree or a rock. And it just makes it loose. And then they flip it. Yeah, impressive, no? Then I found later that the French have a more refined system as you hold the handle. You have the pan. Where you're holding the handle, you hit the handle. You know, just between your hand and there, and that'll loosen it. You know, a little bit more refined than whacking it on the wall. Yeah. Yeah, but whatever. Yeah. Oh, the kids don't care about bending the pan. That's part of the thing, you know. Like, yeah. You know. So the point is this. Without these two, they can still work because they understand the process. So therefore, logic is a tool to be used by those who actually understand philosophy. Otherwise, if you just use the tool and think that's philosophy or that's intelligence, then no, you're using intelligence, but that doesn't mean you're getting anywhere with it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is that just like, you know, Prabhupada gives the example of the boat, right? The people are there, they're rowing the boat all night, but because the anchor's in, it doesn't go anywhere. So just because so much intelligence is there and you're burning so many calories and all that, doesn't mean that, you know, you're going to get anywhere, right? Maybe lose weight. Like, do you ever see a fat scientist? No, because the brain burns more calories than the body. I'm not sure what it is, but it's like thinking about something. You burn like 500 calories. It's ridiculous.
This is true. Even Ayurveda says the same thing.
Yeah. So the whole thing is that that's why you always see skinny scientists, right?
Because nobody feeds them up.
Well, that's another thing. Who wants to feed them? It's just like the nerves. So, the point being is that even though they're using the tool in a very well, you know, mechanically very well, it doesn't mean they're getting anywhere because the samskars on their identity don't allow them to get anywhere. You understand? Because it's all part of the equation. Is that it doesn't matter how logical you are, at the end of the day, what's your identity? Okay, let us say, you know, just like Forbidden Archaeology, right? The book. Now, in there, it's giving scientific proof from scientists who have doing in their analyzation over the last hundreds of years that they've come up with things that are totally opposed to whatever the modern accepted theories are. So, if they're scientists, then they'll look at all those. But the problem is they say they're objective, but when it comes to their identity, how do they choose?
Mm-hmm.
It's totally subjective. So that's the whole point, is they actually can't apply their intelligence. Because it's like this. I'm in a particular position in the university, and if I accept one of these new things, then what is the chair, the board, or the community going to say about me? You know, like I mentioned to one devotee, you know, academic, like that, who, you know, about, you know, talking about the preaching and the difficulty in the academic field, I says, why don't you just be bold, like Subodha or... What's this? Sariputta and what's this other? Dhrutakarma, like that. And he says, oh, but they're rejected by the academy. So therefore, then it's ineffective. But then if you don't do that, then you're just one of the academy, and then you're ineffective. So at least, you know, if you're true to yourself and speak your philosophy, you feel better. And the karmis accept you. Maybe, okay, that handful of you know, Indologists around the world don't accept. But who even knows their names? Who knows who they are? Name me one world-famous Indologist. One comes to mind? No. Because even in the academy, they're the back of the bus. I mean, like you know, it's like you got to look under the back seat to find them. Right? Now, if we say physics, then Hawking's, you know, and a few names come right to, you know, Einstein, this, because physics is right at the front of the bus. So we're going to change the academy by being in the back of the bus underneath the back seat. And then we're not going to say anything. You understand? Mm-hmm. So how are we identifying them? They're identifying as devotees preaching in the academic field. Mm-hmm. Now if you identify that I'm an academic and I want to keep this position and all that, because the position there I'm going to do something in the academy when that's absolutely, totally impossible, mm-hmm. then how is that identity worthwhile? What will you do with it? Where will you get with it? You'll get zero from it. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Otherwise, you have to have one theory, stick to it, and then just keep going for a long time. I know one devotee, I think his name's Advaita. I think he's at Columbia, I'm not sure. So he's been since the 80s, has been working on the, you know, a point that the Aryan invasion theory is bogus. And I think only like last 10 years it's kind of been, you know, people are starting to notice. But that means 30 years of putting in on that one thing, and then it starts to be noticed and like that. So he has to go through. So, you know, who's got the theories? Who's putting it out? You know, what are our ISKCON academics' theories that are against the modern, but they're going through the paces and putting in that 30, 40, 50 year haul to get that one through? Right? Does that make sense? So if you're not doing that, then what's the point? Now, it pays the bills and all that, great. Then just say it's a job. That's all. You know, everybody else has a job. Someone works at, you know, down at the, you know, whatever it is, the Walmart, you know, like that. And someone else works in the, you know, the business community. Someone else runs their own business. Someone does this, that. And you happen to be an academic because that's what you can relate to. That's fine. As an occupation, you're an academic. Great. But don't claim it's preaching. Because you can't. It's against the rules to preach. And you have to follow the rules. Otherwise, you're not in the academy. So that's it. So that's the whole thing. Is that, and even if you do it, once you're gone, will it maintain? Like Einstein. Now they'll say, oh, his theories are not good. Even though they still find out that his stuff still works. Yeah, but they'll still try to, because that's what makes you big. If I can overturn Einstein, I'm better than Einstein. So then why try to work within that? Well, working outside is so much easier. You sit out on the lawn and say whatever you like. It's a free country.
Samskaras and identity. These two factors identify the siddhanta that one comes to.
Yes, but it's the identity that does. The identity is because of the identity you do the action. Because of the action you get the results. Because of that you have the experience. And that gives you the samskara. Yes. So the samskars are there. You only change the samskars by changing the identity and the attitude, right? You understand? That's what we were discussing the other day, is that yes, we're in the material world. The material world's a bad place, and from that we have bad samskaras. You know, we have difficult. I mean, like in general, the modern man has problem with authority because no one acts in a proper way as authority. So therefore, anything that has an authoritative fragrance to it, immediately, you know, the bristles on your back come up. You know, especially if it's in particular areas. You know, family areas, social areas, economic areas, political, whatever it is, then it immediately, you know, like that. So then because of that, we don't get, but the point is we're devotees. And so, yes, we've had that, but that's our conditioning. We have to work with it, yes, but the point is conditioning is only useful if it's engaged in Krishna's service. And engaged in Krishna's service means according to the direction that Krishna gives. And so that means by changing the identity, that changes I accept authority. And okay, now I can distinguish between what's a proper authority and what's not. You understand? And whether I'm in a position to make a comment about authority or not. You know, like sometimes the question comes up, oh, that's very nice, but now what about applying that to authority? Are they in a position of authority? And if they are, then they should apply it. Why are they talking about applying it? Mm-hmm. So to me, that would be, you know, from my experiences, that they're not in a position of authority and they're criticizing those who are. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if they were in authority, they'd see what to do and just do it. Or it's a matter of if they want to show, yes, I'm in a position, I'm going to do that, but everybody else is doing that. So you can kindly tell them that they're wrong. It'll make my life easier because I don't have to tell them they're wrong. Or I can say, see, he said. You understand? So then the process is not, it's not going on that it's my area, I'm thinking about it, I'm trying to use it. It's a matter of, you know, you take the rap and then it'll be easy for me. So that's not what the process is about. So the identity is the key point, as you can see, is that what we say is we're the soul, we're not the body, and we're servant of Krishna. So that makes the identity very clear. Then all the other things just go away. Because if we're not the body and we're devotees, then all the previous samskar, we're not that either. And that will be purified by the devotional process. Okay. Because of varieties in men's intelligence, arguments are without finality, since one argument is demolished by another, right? Because our authority is simply then whose intelligence? Is logic. It's not the Shastra or the eternal truth. Right? Therefore, not giving regard to those arguments, one should accept that Brahman mentioned in the Upanishads to be the object of worship. So we have to accept the authority of Shastra. Shastra says Brahman is the object of worship. Right? Does that make sense? So Brahman is the object of worship. And then of that, the Supreme Brahman is the highest object of worship. Right? So argumentation does not produce finality even for great sages, for one sees disagreement among great sages like Kapila and Karna. Right? Because otherwise, if they were in full agreement, why is there two philosophers? So, because they disagree, then how are you going to come to the final conclusion and how will you get out of the material world because they disagree? So whatever you're doing, someone else can come along and show that it's wrong. Yeah? Purvapaksha. I think otherwise. Okay. So that logic will not be useless, apatishta, because they're pointing out here, well, that means it's useless. No, we're saying it's useful up to a degree. But they're taking, if it's not the absolute, the final point, it's useless. You know, so you always see is that extremity is always there. That's how you also can tell something is material, because of the extreme that's being used. Right? If it's extreme, yeah. And so then you want to see is that extremity that's being used, then if it's used in connection with Krishna just to make a point, because people don't get subtlety, so you have to be more extreme, then that's fine. But when it's about one's own samskaras of identity, then we can see it's emotion. It just means you've struck a chord that's, delicate. Therefore, they're using a more extreme example. Right? So here you can see is for them, this is the very core point. And so now they'll go very extreme. One cannot say that logic has no finality, since logic was even used to deduce that logic is not final. Right? And so, like this, then yeah, it's a waste of time. Otherwise, I've seen this used to advantage. I remember once it was there was a discussion. It was, I think, what would have been, what would that been? Maybe 74. All the devotees in Vrindavan, when they were there for the festival, they stayed down the road. There was one ashram everybody used to stay at.
Fogel,
yes, like that. And how it looks now, you know, pretty run down. It looked the same then. Yeah, it is. It's in Vrindavan. It's right. So we're there in the kind of the more inside, all the way at the very back, because I think the Swami stayed at the back. He's standing on people's shoulders. So they're there, and you know, all the Swamis, everyone stayed there. And so then they're, somebody in the back, you know, trying to see what's going on. So then it was that they were having, you know, all the Swamis are there and all the Brahmacharis are there, and there's an argument going on, you know, Mayavadis and devotees. So Hridayananda Maharaj was a devotee and Panchadevita was the Mayavadi. Panchadevita somehow always took that role, because even when Prabhupada, they go on walks, then Prabhupada start, you want to explain things, you have Panchadevita be the Mayavadi. So then, you know, using the same style of logic, but in connection with Krishna, you know, so then, therefore, the technique is useful. Is then Panchadevita said, we're all God. You know, so you get, you know, so that's the authority on why things. And then Hridayananda Maharaj, he said, says, okay, so then if we're all God, that means I'm God. And he said, yes. And so therefore, on my authority as God, I say you're not God. Like that. He didn't know what to say to that one. So. Yeah, so that's the thing, is that it works. As long as it establishes the proper thing, you can use these techniques. But to think that the technique itself establishes the point, it's not. Because if someone's more clever and has a retort to that, then that's defeated. You understand? Because the point is you're trying to come to a conclusion. Therefore, you have all kinds of techniques that are there. Ones that are very straightforward. It means there's the formula that you use, right? The Panchanga Nyaya, right? That's the format that you use. And then you have all kinds of techniques you can use inside. How the logic works, what all the different things, the grammatical point. But you also have ones for when people don't behave properly. Like that. Much of the time, those who don't behave properly use them as their main techniques, but you can use them back. You know, it's just like somebody's there and whatever, they're always trying to take it off path. You just take their stuff and take it off. So that throws them off. They take your words and by chala then change the meaning. You just take theirs and change it back. Like that. Sorry?
They get very annoyed.
Yeah, they get very annoyed. Or, you know, it means whatever is, it means you just stick to one thing. You won't move from that point. Because they want to move. Speculation means you move. That's the joy. You won't move. You know? I think in the modern term they call it stonewalling. Like that. But it's got the Sanskrit name. You know, so there's all these techniques that you can use. And, but the point is that you want to establish the proper Siddhanta. That's what you're trying to get to. So, if you don't need to use it, why use them? You can just be straightforward. But if you need to, you use them because if it works with the logic that the person's using, and then they'll understand an aspect of the absolute truth, then it's worthwhile. Right? But it's not logic that establishes it. It's just that's the state their mind is in, and you use the right example, then they understand. Use the wrong example, they'll fight, and use the right example, oh, now I get it. Does that make sense? So that's why it's always limited. But they're trying to take it, no, the logic itself can establish the truth. And that never will be there, because as pointed out by the Acharya, is the varieties of men's intelligence arguments that were without finality. If there's no finality, how do you even get liberated? Let alone the spiritual world. Right? So, if all logic was useless, then all worldly actions would come to an end. So, did he say it's all useless? No, he says it's without finality on its own. So what does that mean? You're using it up to a point is useful. After that, then it's only by the Lord's grace. So if you're using that logic in connection with pleasing the Lord reveals himself. If you're using that logic to show how intelligent you are or to come, you know, and come up with some mundane conclusion, then you won't get beyond that point. Right? And according to your karma, you'll only be that intelligent. So, yeah.
Wondering how much we should actually understand how to use these different techniques. I just saw a video with Friedan Ananias, and he was some guy invited him to a talk show, but it was like a Christian who ran the talk show, and they were talking back and forth, and he was demolished. You know, he had all these.
Who, the Christian guy?
Huh?
The Christian guy.
No, we don't know.
Oh, he was the most.
Yeah, it was really surprising.
Because it's just a matter, that's what we're saying, is that it's logic. So where has Vidyananda Maharaj applied his logical, you know, analytical points? Right? To college students. Because they're the ones that are up and coming, they're the ones that come devotees, they're going to be your future. So he's dealing with them. And so whatever they say, how they say it, he's been thinking about it for years, he has an argument. But now, what Christian guys that sit around all day thinking about and arguing about, that's not an area that we would necessarily be thinking about, especially since he's a little bit more Abrahamic than the Christians. Okay? And so, does that make sense? So, he may know some arguments there. You know, things that might come up with in Israel or something like that. But this he won't know. So now it's that guy said that. Now, Hridayananda Maharaj will think about that. He'll have a retort after some time. You know what I'm saying? So then if you had a second debate, now he'd do better. Because that's all they do. You have people that do that. So I think there was this, I think he's from South Africa. Then a Muslim guy. All he does is argue about how everybody else is, you know, illogical and stupid. You know, so that's all he does all day. So he thinks about anything that they say and they come up with the thing. So it's just, that's the point that's being made because of the varieties of men's intelligence arguments come up. So that's why we're saying logic's not the final point. So you go into the area, you use the technical points like that if you can see through. That's why we're talking about principle more. Because you can see is maybe you don't know the logic, you don't know the technical points that they're making, but you understand what's the principle on which they're basing it. Therefore, when that's there, then you can see through what they're actually talking about and go to that and avoid the technical point, because that's just a matter of intelligence and argumentation. You understand? That's the point of logic we're trying to get. That's why we say it's only a tool. We don't take it as more important than that. Like if you have a good pan for cooking, it's good. But it's still your cooking techniques that's more important. You understand? So it's just a matter of where they've applied it. Now you take that Christian guy, and he's arguing there, and take him down to the university with those college students, he might not do so well. Right? Because the things they'll come up with, and the spontaneous that they come up with, he may not do well with. That's why he's using that form, bringing in people that are religious, that think in their own area, and that, and don't think about another discipline. So then he looks good. But in actuality, you put him in another thing, and he'll be terrible. So that's the point that the Acharya is making, is that logic has a limitation on use, but it doesn't mean that we don't know it properly to use it properly. It's just like anything you want to do. Management, you know the skills. Then your management goes better. But it's the devotion in which it's done that actually makes it perfect. Then you'll make the best decisions because it's based on bhakti, not on control or any economic or anything else. It'll be that proper balance on what's proper for Krishna. So if that's there, then the manager will be perfect. Now, as we add in technique, it just becomes better. But its actual perfection is not the technique, it's the devotion. So we're saying the same thing with logic. So that's the economic field or the management field. So this is the intellectual field. Is the tools are there, but it's not the tools that make it perfect. Does that make sense? So that's why we can have someone like that, and then they'll figure it out. You know, especially someone like Hridayananda Maharaj. He's smart. He can sit in there and analyze something, and he'll figure it out.
And the guy was saying, you're getting angry, you're getting angry. And then he started really getting angry. I said, I'm not angry.
Yeah, but the point is they know how to use these things. Because
yeah.
The point is then you could also say, is what's the problem with getting angry? Why are you saying getting angry is a problem?
He was saying it's,
So if I say, you know, Jesus is a schmo, so then, and then if he gets angry, why are you getting angry? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that they go on with all these things.
You can say they're expert in your
That's it. It's just a matter of that. So what we're saying is that it's a different area. Because the point is they use anger all the time. You know, if they didn't use anger, you know, crusades, you know, how you say, you know, the whole, how they established Christianity in Alexandria. You know, that wasn't angry. They go to the program where the Jews are having a thing. And if they didn't, let's say, wear proper clothes or something was exactly according to their rules, not that the Christians cared, but it's against the rules. And then they say, see, you're bogus. And they start literally throwing stones. They walked around with bags full of stones. That was their preaching.
Very effective.
And it was very effective. They drove the Jews out, they burnt down the library, they destroyed the pagans, and like that. The guy who did all that violence was made a saint. You know? He destroyed science. It took another 1,000 years for them to get back to where they were then. You know, so that's the whole point is that anger, he's talking about anger? You know, so that you catch that point. What's wrong with anger? And then now he doesn't have anything to say, because who's asked him about that? Because everybody goes, oh yes, you're supposed to be nice and lovey-dovey and this and that.
Yeah, he was just totally unprepared.
Yeah, that's all. It's because you don't know, and they're dependent upon that. They're dependent upon you being unprepared. That's what Prabhupada is like. They ask, because Prabhupada's talking about the weaknesses in Western civilization, you know, and all how it's useless and all this kind of thing. And so then one of these kind of talk show guys invited him to the show, who is, you know, famous for being very, very aggressive and just rip people to shreds, and people love to see that. You know, it's like the, you know, like the, yeah, you know, like the Romans, you know, you go to the Colosseum and watch the lions tear apart somebody, right? You know, before it'd be the Jews, and then when the Christians came along, hey, they're more fun, you know, so like that, you know, so it's gotta, you know, like somebody's gotta be ripped to shreds, right? So then he calls them in, and then he's got this whole plan. And so he asked Prabhupada, so, you know, what do you think of the American society or something like that, you know? And I'm not sure that his show wasn't somewhere more down south, so they'd be very rah-rah American, you know, like Georgia or someplace like that. And so then Prabhupada says, actually, it's very good, because we see my students who have come and how nice and intelligent and how absorbed, they, you know, they can, you know, understand the, you know, the religious and devotional process. So that means that they have such good, you know, character, means that they're their parents. So because of their parents, now they're trained so nicely, so it got that. The guy's whole strategy was blown. He didn't know what to say. So then he just asked Prabhupada, so then what are you guys doing? And then Prabhupada spent the rest of the show, you know, it's an hour show, just talking about what we were doing. So that's the whole point, is that it's not logic against logic, you're cutting through the logic. Means if the logical thing's been presented, you go on that. They make a good point. You accept that. You don't go, oh, that's bogus, and go against it. That's also a modern thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that you're saying a great point, let's say in the political field. Someone makes a good point, but someone, because they're the opposite party, you have to oppose it. You know, if the Republicans say one, the Democrats have to say the opposite. If the Democrats come up with a good idea, the Republicans have to say it's bogus, even though it's good. Right, so here's that means the logic, they're using logic, and you see that the logic, and it's a good point, but you're going to take that point and not use it how they're using it. Use it for what it's supposed to be. So what's the actual definition of? So Prabhupada could see through what he was doing and just went to the essential point. And because of that, they're disarmed. So if you just go head to head on logic, unless you're better than the other guy and more prepared. Because those in the Vedic things, they prepare for these discussions. You know there's going to be thing, if the theme is already known, then you prepare. You have your scholars, you sit down there, you go through all the books, you come up with it. And then based on that, so then they know, what is the Shastra, like that, like, what was it? I think Tenali Ram, they had a problem, that the big, big logician had come, the Digvijay, had come to town, and he was going, you know, and he's been defeating people at all the different kingdoms and just going around. And then when people are defeated, they join his thing, and so he's got more scholars to back him up and do the research. So he comes there, and then he comes to challenge, you know, and everybody's freaking out. In fact, just hearing he's coming, many of them disappear. And so then the king doesn't know what to do. And so then Tenali Ram, then he says, tell him that our best pundit will come forward tomorrow, and we'll discuss. You come at this time. So then they come the next day, and then Tenali Ram dresses himself up like a big scholar, and he has this bundle. And he comes in with this bundle, big bundle, because generally they bring their books in the bundle like that. He's got this monster bundle and plunks it down. And then, they come in that. And so then the other is the Digvijay. He's the big guy. And this is, Juna, he's coming to challenge. So therefore, the challenger gets to choose the Shastra and what they'll debate on. So he says, I want to debate on the Tilastika Moisha Bandana Shastra. Like that, the guy goes, Tilastika Moisha Bandana Shastra. Says, I'm not familiar with that. So, give me a day. We'll come back tomorrow and we'll discuss. Then we'll argue. He said, yes. That's the whole point, because this logic is, there is a basis. You know what everyone's talking about. Then he went back with his pundits. They're looking at everything. No one knows anything in that, because that's what the discussion is on. He knows nothing. And during the night, they all sneak out and leave. So then the next day, then he comes for the thing, and then they go. No one's not showing up. They send the messengers. They find out they've gone, packed up and left. Couldn't say anything. So they come back and inform, and then the king is very elated. He says, and then he turns to Tenali, what is this Tilastika Moisha Bandana Shastra? I've never heard of it. Like that. So he takes the bundle, he opens it. Inside is 8 bundles of, when you cut the harvest, the till, or the sesame seeds, bundled together. There's 8 of them. Till means sesame. Astika means 8 bundles of sesame. And he had a rope for tying buffaloes, Moisha Bandana. Like that. So that was, it was inside. And so then, yes.
This is Vitanda. One of the padarthas of Nyaya to defeat the other party. It's Vitanda that he's using.
Vitanda, okay. He just defeated. Yeah. So it's like that. It's an aspect of logic. You use it. It's not that any conclusion is there, but the proper understanding is established. So it's used as much as it gets the work done. Like, how much do you use the torque wrench? Right? Only how much is necessary. You use it less, it's not enough. You use it too much, then it's bad. So anything, it's just how much is necessary. You don't use more. So it's a tool. So then when we overemphasize, the intellectuals overemphasize it, then it's wrong, because it only has a limited application. But at the same time, those who it's just sentiment, we don't need all this, it's just what you feel, they're not using enough of it, so it's also wrong. So sentiment is important, but they're using too much of that. Is that
what are the different tools? We have logic, sentiment, analyze.
Means you're just saying here is that you're using, you have in this process, you have the mind, you have the intelligence, and you have the ego. Right? And then the senses are, of course, used to get information. But that's what we have to work with. We don't have any more than that. Because when he says senses, that's what engages the body. Right? So we say body, mind, and words, and that means the body is engaged by the senses. Like that, which then, in this case, we count as the body. Then that's controlled by the intelligence. Mm-hmm. So then here is that then the engagement of it is that you're trying to get to the point where the mind accepts, so it has to be acceptable to the mind. So the logic has to be applicable. So that's why just pure logic, then those who do that, they're not actually mentally very developed. Maybe in controlling their mind and this, but as far as using it personally in their life, that no. You see, they're like kids. Super intelligent kids. Like that. Well, some may develop that very nicely, but they don't necessarily have so much logic. You know, you might see a simple, like, farmer. You know, as, you know, 50, 60-year-old guy, he can give you really, really practical life, you know, instructions. But it's not that he's, like, super intelligent and logical and all that, but just through experience, he's just seen this is how it works.
Yes. Because they have, the logicians have, it's like they're getting a taste from the speculation.
Yes. Yes. That's their taste. So they don't need more. Just like those who are into the sensual, they don't need more. Or those who are into the emotional, they don't need more. You know, does that make sense? So it's wherever they get their taste. So the point is that the idea is that it should be balanced. So if the if the identity is devotional, then the samskars will be devotional. Then we'll use our intelligence in a devotional way. Then it becomes balanced because there's a common point. Because when sense gratification is there, then it's always going to be a problem. Because sense gratification means, like Prabhupada says, is throwing many rocks into the pond. You get so many centers, right, that they all collide. Well, if you throw one, you only get one, and you have rings that can go across the whole lake perfectly. Like that. So when Krishna is the center, then everything else can be connected to that. There may be a hierarchy, just like in the rings. There's rings that are closer, there are rings that are farther, but they're perfectly balanced. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole thing, when we complain and go, oh no, but you're giving this position, what about this? That's because we want to make that the center, but then it collides with the others. There's a hierarchy. You know, does that make sense? So like for us, Brahmins are at this point, then Kshatriyas, then Vaishyas, then Shudras. That's just the way it works. Because of the values they have. Knowledge is higher than influence, which is higher than money, which is higher than simply a skill. Like that. Does that make sense?
I just keep recalling these stories from Chaitanya Charitamrita where it talks about a Tapan Mishra and another devotee, how they weren't expert in Shastra.
Right.
And therefore...
they were classified as third-class devotees.
Yeah, although they were... You know,
yes, because there's three different ways you can classify the Uttam, Madhyam, and Kanishtha. So one is on the knowledge of Shastra. Right? One is on faith. I think the other is on chanting. Right. So then, in knowledge means who doesn't know the Shastra can't argue it. That's a neophyte. Madhyama means he can argue it, but he can't always win. Right? Uttama means you can't defeat him because he's not using actual logic. He's going beyond logic. Because he has realization. Everybody else is arguing on understanding. So he can see through whatever anybody says, no matter how intelligent they are. Right? So it's not that, yes, he's the best at arguing or best at... No, he knows the purpose of it. That's why he can cut through everything. We get distracted by the secondary aspects. Because when you're discussing philosophy with anybody, it will always be on the secondary points. They don't. They only discuss on the primary. So they didn't know the Shastras like that to argue and all that. So, but that doesn't mean that they didn't have the Uttama faith. Now, in faith, in Lord Chaitanya, they're on the Uttama platform. That's why we get confused, because by that. But they, because of their nature and their associates and what service they do, they didn't need to know the Shastras like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. And then the third is that the neophyte, then he's not so regular in chanting. The Madhyama is then fixed in chanting. And the Uttama on seeing them, you chant. You know what I'm saying? So that's you're inspired. So like Prabhupada sitting down in Thompson Square Park. he's chanting, and people see it, and then they all start chanting. He wasn't doing anything else. So that's that. Those three things. So what you're seeing there is that in the chanting and in the faith, they're uttamas. But in the knowledge of the scriptures, not that they don't know the essence, but they can't, let's say, argue the logic and that. Like Jiva Goswami went to Varanasi and studied for 20 years. Then the logic he uses, the mechanics of logic that he uses, when Prabhupada says that he's the greatest scholar in the contemporary age, that's literal. Means, you know, from what we know from, you know, so many, you know, basically you can say in the Kali Yuga up to now, there has never been, and I would say never will be, a scholar in logic and that as good as him. So it's not just we're saying that because he's our acharya. It's being said because that's the fact.
Do we study the Sundarbhas next?
Or? Yes, that's if we ever get through this. Yeah, we've been on this page now. It's the second day, so it's a little slower than I had originally conceived. You know, because it's playing with the fundaments of our, how you say, logical identity. So it brings up. Yeah, it brings up stuff that generally you would get in the first few years.
So somebody gave this logic to Prabhupada. Can Krishna invent a rock which he can't lift? So Prabhupada said, yes, he can invent that rock, and afterwards he can lift it.
Yes, like that. So it's just Prabhupada's there, or that one who asked, oh, if you know everything, how many windows in the Empire State Building? Prabhupada said, how many windows in the Mirage? The guy doesn't know what to say, because the point is that they're trying to get into the facts. Do you know the facts? The point is can you tell the difference to what's illusion and what's reality? That's knowing everything, you know, like that. So it's like, how important it is that how many coconut trees were there in your, you know, hallucination in the desert? You know, so what does it matter? So that's the point, is that Prabhupada can cut through. That's what we're trying to get to. That's what all this logic and all these things are trying to show us. Logic is a tool that's used. You know, just like Varnashram is a tool that's used, or management, or economics, or variety of important, useful skills, like that, proper sentiments and dealing and relationship. All these things are useful. But they're only useful connected with the primary point of love for Krishna. And if you don't connect it to that, then it's a waste of time. Because you can say, no, it's so important. Yes, important to you now. And then when you get old and you can't do it, then next life. You know, it's like that man, Prabhupada tells that story of that man, very wealthy man, but a real miser. Real, real miser. And then when he died, he took birth as a homeless person, a beggar, that his place for hanging out was in front of that house. You know, that used to be his house, and his sons were there. And I think one day he, you know, went to beg from them, and they beat him with shoes. They didn't know that this was their father, you know, but next life. So that's the whole point, is that for him that's so important, his business, his sons, his wealth, you know, setting it all up for eternity and then next life, then he has no connection, and all that he did, he gets zero benefit. In fact, he gets, you know, abused from it. So, you know, so that's the whole point, is we're trying to, that the Shastras are saying, is that all these are useful as tools, but if you get into them, make them a trip. You know, it's about cooking, but you get into pots and pans or knives or graters or colanders, and you have it. I remember one devotee I saw, he had this kind of like, what do you call it? Sarcophagus?
Sarcophagus.
Sarcophagus. You know, just a imitation one of, you know, one of the pharaohs or something like that. You know, in the corner of his room, all painted up and that. Okay, cool, like that. And then he opened it. It had the most wildest knives I've ever seen. I mean, not just ordinary knives. Unless they were crazy knives, they weren't in there. You know. So that was all this, you know, so it's like, okay. You know, so like that, you overemphasize that. Or a guy's got, you know, you hear about these celebrities, they got 30 cars or 50 cars. You can start, I think one guy in England, they have a museum of all his cars. It's a famous museum in London, outside London. That it's just all his cars collection, then, you know, after he died, they just made it into a museum. Like that. So, you know, and so we take those and we emphasize. So it's okay as a personality and all that. And that you have that, that's fine. That makes the uniqueness of the personality, the particular mix. But if it's not connected to Krishna, it's a waste of time. So that's the whole thing, is that the uniqueness can be there, but if it's not connected to Krishna, so it's not important because of its uniqueness. It's only important because of its use in Krishna's service. So you understand? So that allows us, every individual, to be different, as long as that core point of Krishna is the same. You understand? So therefore the Vedic version, and then the Vaishnava version, especially the Gaudiya version, is the broadest minded of all of them. Because when you focus on the secondary, unless there's great commonality in the secondary, you have no community. But here's the community is actually based on about Krishna. Does this make sense? So then you can have such variety. But at the same time, it has that certain basis, and then within that you can make unlimited variety. You know what I'm saying? You just like you can say, okay, we're limited, let's say we stay within our tradition, then you're wearing a dhoti or wearing a chadar. You know, you're limited. You can't do so many things with it. Point is we used to, do a workshop and show like 15 different ways you can wear a chadar and so many different ways you can wear a dhoti. And that's just that. You know, saris you won't even get into. They have books on that. I mean, literally, books on how many ways you can put them on. So then the point comes down is that you've accepted this area, then within that you generate variety. Because it says, oh, but pants, it says, yeah, how many ways can you put on a pair of pants? One. You can't put it on two different ways.
In the 80s they invented for some time wear the pants backwards.
Yeah, but they were designed so you could put them on that way. It looked like they were backwards, but you had to put them on always backwards. You couldn't turn them around and put them on frontwards. You know what I'm saying? So they can only be put on one way. You know what I'm saying? A shirt you can do a little bit more with, but that's more for ladies. Men can't do so much with it. They can roll up their sleeves, leave a few buttons undone, but they can't tie the bottom. The women can tie the bottom. You know, stuff like that. You know, so there's a few ways. You can get a few, but the point is it's within that you can then make the variety, but it's according to your ability. So the person that can't make any variety with pants and shirts can't make any variety with dhotis. So it's not about, there's no variety. It's that you don't know what to do with it. So it's only different because it's a different pair of pants. But it's still pants. You know, it's jeans or it's some slacks or some corduroys or something like that. But it's still the same thing. You know what I'm saying? And so in the same way, the dhoti. You can have 20 different dhotis with different borders and different colors. And remember we had Pujari here, he wear like purple and all kinds of wild stuff. So the point is you can do all these different things. It's just a matter of you accept the area, then you use the logic. So therefore, as we accept the Veda, and then within the Veda, then we can use. And then we have these tools, and they have the limit of what you can do with them. Like that, because that's always going to be there. Material always has a limited aspect. But the variety you can generate, if you accept the position, accept the science, accept the art, then that's where it goes. So that's what we're being given. And so the Gaudiya can accommodate the widest range of that. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like here. You look at that, and the difference of what's here. You know, he's in a yogipata, he's in a white shirt, he's in a white chadar, you're in a white shirt, and it's got two buttons undone, he's got all the buttons up, here's his long sleeve, here's his short sleeve, he's got long sleeve and all the buttons done up. Does that make sense? You know, does that make sense? He's the chadar, but with another chadar, and he's just got the one chadar. You know what I'm saying? And he's got the chadar, but just on the shoulder. Does that make sense? So it's all there. And then the colors, this is white, that's green, and that's another kind of printed fabric. And does that make sense? You know, and his chadar is, you know, got a small border, his one's got a big border, his one's got no border. You know what I'm saying? So you can get unlimited variety. And so it's just a matter of appreciating that. Then you can see is what's there, what's available. Okay. So if all logic was useless, then all worldly actions would come to an end. Yes, so if all logic was, yes it would, but we're not saying it all is. We say it doesn't give a conclusion. We're not saying it's not useful, it just doesn't give a conclusion. One sees that people attain pleasure or avoid pain in the future based on experiences of the present and past, logically classified as favorable and unfavorable, right? So we said we have to analyze and categorize. So that process is there. Yes, we use the process. Uttara. But this would lead to absence of liberation. When you depend on logic based on human intelligence, it is possible that your conclusion will be refuted by a more skillful logician from another place or at another time. Right, so then the Acharya has put something out there, and so then that's happening, but then we see is that at a later time, then someone else comes up and defeats it. By the inconclusiveness of logic, you cannot be liberated. Though logic is final in particular worldly matters, right? You can take it up to a particular point of what's useful. You can speculate all you want, but there's only certain things that are useful, right? So scholars are speculating on things all the time. And then sometimes they figure out one aspect of it that's useful, but generally someone else figures out what's useful and then they use it. They make it money from it. Right? So. In regards to Brahman, logic is not given respect since it is useless regarding what is inconceivable and contrary to the Shruti. So it goes beyond. So all these different things where we see that are contradictory, we say are not logical, they have no problem in reconciliation in Brahman. And it is contrary to your own words. Shruti, virodhan, na. Shruti says that Brahman is beyond logic. And so then saying, you know, you're saying that, throw it out, but what we're saying is Brahman is beyond logic. Therefore, then we can't accept that logic is going to give us the final conclusion. Even your own Shastra says. But you don't say that first. You first go through the thing and then you use that as a final, because then it's like you've given all this, it's logical. Now they would argue it again. But now you say, but your Shastra says that also. Because if you start with that, no, that's not what it means, and this is, you understand. So it's just a matter of, that's the whole point, that's the remedy. You're just knowing how to put it together.
Yeah. Would there be maybe a the essence of arguing these different philosophies is to use examples that show how even things in this world are inconceivable?
You can if that's necessary. It's just a matter of what you have to use, what will work at the point. Because if you show it's inconceivable here, then they'll say, oh, then it's spiritual. Or, we don't, you know, it's so great here, we don't need anything beyond. So you have to be careful what example you use where. So you have to see that what you use isn't going to create a bad effect. Does that make sense? Okay. Naisha tarkena matir apaneya proktan yenaiva sujanaya preshta. This knowledge cannot be achieved by logic. Oh dear one, it should be taught by another person in order to be understood properly. Katha Upanishad 1:29. So from someone else, that means someone in Parampara, and specifically we can see from the Vedas that it means someone who understands the absolute truth. So someone who's a seer of the truth, they teach it, that's how we learn. So we learn from all these, you know, from our acharyas. Because they can see then what others are saying. than the next. O sage, the contemplative sages know that peaceful form of the Lord when they have controlled their mind, senses, and body. That form disappears when assailed by false logic. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.6.41. So false logic doesn't mean that mechanically it's necessarily wrong. It means that false because you're using logic where it's not to be used. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole point, is that there's a place where it has to be applied. And so if we're applying it outside of that, it becomes false logic. That's the important part. You also have the mechanics of it. If something's wrong, it doesn't make sense. So that's there. But this is meaning is that when you use logic to try to know the Lord, and it's not about knowing the Lord, like that, you think that the logic itself will create the understanding, then that form disappears. Yes?
Can we say that in our own past, then at the level of Ruchi, we don't use much logic?
You don't have to, because logic is there to make that choice of activity that's going to give you a favorable experience.
Right.
Ultimately, everything's about experience.
Yeah.
Right? So you can see as the difference being is that men like going through the mechanical aspects. And then there's the experience. While women, it's just as long as the experience is there, they're not worried about the mechanics. So if they're getting a good experience, even if the mechanics aren't good, they're happy. Right? Because ultimately everybody's trying to get experience. So it's already, they're working on, technically, on that higher principle. So that's why then you see also in the feminine application, they can go from material absorption and sentiment or sense gratification to switch to spiritual without having to go through that middle logical liberation kind of things that men tend to do. So in that way, it's easier as long as they can switch. If they don't switch, then it's harder, because then for the men, is you can analyze it and separate it from experience, because analyzation means you separate it from experience. And so unless that is an experience for you, which also doesn't mean that women aren't there. You have women physicists. I remember seeing one couple, they were both physicists, like that. And, because the experience that you get from it, well, him is the mechanics of it, then that experience of that would get. Hers, it would just be how it works out, and it makes, you know, it solves, it does things. So for her, it was fine, and she was really good. So, but it's the experiential that's important. So that's what the soul is looking for, is the experiential. Because the facts and all that, Krishna's already doing. He is the creation. He is everything. So then, that platform in which he can interact with the living entities is the experiential, therefore rasa. So all the logic, all the mechanics is simply to generate the logic. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of that they get their taste, because they're intellectuals, from the mechanics. You know, that it's such a nice equation, or it's solid, then they're so happy. Does that make sense? You know, they're able to get something done, they feel happy. Right? Does that make sense? But the point is we see is that Krishna's, that he just does that. That's the way he is. So you can say, no, but that's a manly thing. But we're trying to enjoy that. Why? Because we're actually female. You know, we're in the masculine position. But we're trying to enjoy it, the experiential. Because Krishna, it's the experience of it, it's Atmarama. It's natural. But that's not where the focus is. The focus is on the experience that's gained from the interaction. Because that's the common ground with the feminine. Is that what it says? So that's why when jivas get into this logic and that, they're worse than actually, you know, a man who's logical, means Krishna. Because for him, it's just one of the things that's a course. But, you know, but the other is the experiential. So because I'm attached to it, I'm getting a taste from this, that's why I'm attached to it. Well, for Krishna, the taste is not that great. It's not greater than interaction, relationship. So we'll put it the other way around. You know, it's just like in the modern scenario, the success you have in your career gives more taste than, let's say, family life. Well, in the Vedic thing, family life gives more taste than occupation. his occupation is done because that's what you do to maintain yourself. And then higher than family, that family experience is the spiritual. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. Therefore, Shruti is the proof for Brahman, as it is for Dharma. Here we get to see here, as it is. It's a common term. Logic which supports Shruti is given regard. For Shruti says, mantavyaha. Brahman is the object of reasoning. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.5. So we're not saying it's useless. We're saying is that only when it is in supports the Shruti in regards to Brahman, then it has worthwhile. But if it's against Shruti, which the Shankyites here are doing, then that's to be rejected. Smriti says, Purva para virodhena ko rito ko korto tra bhimato bhavet it yadyam udanam tarkas shushka tarkam vivar jayet. Reasoning which determines the meaning by resolving all contradictions with previous and later statements is correct argumentation. Argumentation should reject dry logic, Korma Purana. So, yeah. So, determining the meaning, resolving all contradictions with previous and later statements. Like we can see is what's happening is all the previous times when we were taking a specific Vishaya-Vakya, right, a specific verse, then the argument is that this verse means this. But then the Acharyas point out, but previously it said this, and after this it says this, which are totally contradictory to what you're saying. So in this one line of conversation, it opens with Brahman, it ends with Brahman, it's talking about Brahman. Right? Because that's what Mimamsa points out, is that the opening statement, the closing statement, what's repeated, what's emphasized, what's given uniqueness, these are what the topic matter is. So that's what's going on. So they're not resolving. They're not using reasoning to determine the meaning, resolving the contradictions of the beginning and end and now what's there in the middle. Mm-hmm. So they just take whichever one they want. And that becomes their Vishaya-Vakya, right? Their main statement. Mm-hmm. But here it's saying actual logic is when you put all that together and then are able to resolve the contradictions all there by that higher principle. Because when you have contradictions, that means contradiction in the lower aspect, the secondary aspect. You take that up to the primary, that's where they're resolved. So when you do that, that's argumentation. Otherwise, it's a waste of time. That's dry logic. You're just using mechanics. So, all these points that we made here, then the Acharya says, therefore, Brahman is the material cause of the universe. Because Shastra says. Right? They're saying is that, no, these points would, you know, it doesn't make sense logically, but according to Shastra and according to their own Shastra, that you can't know Brahman through logic. So then, why are you saying that you can know? Why are you trying to apply logic then? Right? And so logic has its importance only in connection with understanding Brahman. And then when you just use it to argue against that principle, then it's a waste of time. We're over time.
We know that it says that one shouldn't sit on the asan unless he's experienced, knows all these different six philosophies.
Yes.
Because the concept of yukta vairagya is such an essential principle,
right,
for our movement. How important is it to like understand all these different philosophies?
The point is that now why what's the point of why would one sit on the Vyasasana in the first place? What's the point to sit there? Is this a great seat and the one in your house isn't as comfortable, or you like the colors, or you know, it's kind of unique that it's got all these pillows instead of just, like a regular armchair. You know, why you're sitting there.
Representing the disciplines.
Okay. And what's the whole point of, if you understand the whole process of all the different philosophies and the logic and all that, what's the advantage of that?
To defeat these philosophies when they come up.
Yes, so there's no contradiction there. Right? So then Yukta Vairagya means, the point is you're using the situation to please Krishna. Because Vairagya means you're detached. So one's sitting on the Vyasasan to discuss discussions about Krishna. Right? So now, if nobody knows about all these, the point is this preaching goes on anyway. But it's not that we don't need it. It means that in the future, when people can discuss them, they'll be the ones sitting on the Vyasasan and we'll be the ones sitting there listening.
Mm-hmm. But it just seems to me, because this principle of Yukta Vairagya is so difficult to master, because it takes realization that...
Yes, so in other words, we can't say Yukta Vairagya to sit there without knowing all these things and say we don't need to know all these things, because unless you could knew all those things and therefore could sit there, only then you actually understand Yukta Vairagya. So it's one of those. So, in other words, we do the best we can at the position we can, and if we're sincere, Krishna appreciates that, we go back to Godhead, because it's not dependent upon logic or karma or jnana or anything like that. It's based on bhakti. So even we don't know that, but what's the effect of us preaching is people are convinced they take up devotional service. That's what you want. But we'll find in the future, these things will be common for people. Like, we didn't grow up in this. And because we didn't grow up in this, then our kids are just kind of like exposed a bit to it, but not so much because we don't deal with it. But now then their kids will be exposed a bit more. So after some generations, growing up, understanding and discussing these things will be normal. And so therefore then, because that's normal, then everybody who sits on the Vyasasan will know that. Well, now basically nobody knows that. But that's only from that logical point of view or the mechanical point of view. But the essence of what the scripture is, everyone who's sitting in the Vyasasan knows. So the essence of what you're trying to get to is known. Just they may not be as good at arguing or questions and things like that, but that doesn't matter. As long as we're speaking about the absolute truth, people get faith. Now if we try to refine our sitting on the Vyasasan by modern, you know, so-called logic and stuff like that and political correctness and all that, then we're kind of going in the opposite direction. Because then, yes, we're having influence, we're giving people faith in modern, mundane, politics and economics. And then we're making a mistake thinking that's going to improve devotional service, when devotional service is independent. So that's what has to be understood. That we can't use the extremes like the Shankyites. Oh, so we don't need it? No, that we need. Oh, so then you go the other way. Oh, so you can just be rough and red? No, we're trying to be, you know, devotees are refined. So we just mean refined. We don't need any of those. No, you know, it's like the kid wants to do something. They want to push the button on the computer. You know, so even you hold them back, their arm is still going like this, and they're not, you know, the button's there, and they're still trying to push the button. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki. Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki. Jai Nitai Gaura Pendra.